A caller says, children should not be exposed to what is proposed in the sex ed programme. This is one of the reasons I decided to take her welfare out of state hands and homeschool. I do my duty as a mother to look after her mentally, spiritually and physically myself. That is one parent. And the reason they've texted in, because very shortly we are going to be having an extended discussion on new sex education proposals. And of course, those that resist and those are in favour. I can't help but think that Tim may be correct in his predictions for us and what and Europe. What if President Trump orders the American high-tech companies based in Ireland to relocate to Britain? That was Raymond, wasn't it? He could do that as he appears to be arranging a cosy marriage with Boris lately. Yeah, they certainly are, it seems, on the same hymn sheet in that regard. Right, now, on to our topic. Dominic McGrath, journalist with thejournal.ie. And Dominic, lovely to chat to you. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for having me on.
Right, the sex education bill. Where are we at? Was this something that we sort of first started hearing about and conversing about in January, or does it predate that?
Yes, yeah, so it kind of began the conversation with the sort of a committee on the Eighth Amendment. In their report, they said we need to sort of update our sex education teaching in Ireland. Of course, for a long time, people have had concerns about the adequacy of, you know, sex education teaching in Ireland. But then, of course, it kind of became a bigger issue when three Solidarity, People for Profit, TDs, Ruth Coppinger, Paul Murphy, Mick Barry, they published a bill on objective sex education. Their idea was basically that we need to enshrine in law the fact that children and students should be taught objective, fact-based sex education regardless of their school's ethos. So the debate sort of came from there. Richard Bruton, who was then the Minister for Education, kind of welcomes the spirit of the bill. The bill went to the second stage in the Dáil, which is, you know, quite a lot of progress for private members' bill. And from there, the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment have undertaken a review of sex education and relationship education in Ireland. And they published their most recent draft report just last month, actually, on the issue.
And what is up for discussion? In terms of, like, I mean, what is being proposed? Because, of course, a lot of people took particular issue, I think, and just to warn people of sensitive ears, but they would know what we're talking about before we started, and I flagged this before you come on, Dominic. But one of the things that has been said quite regularly is that children as young as four may be taught about self-pleasure, for example.
Yes. So it's kind of like, it helps, I guess, think of the process along two parallel tracks. So the bill was published. Quite a short bill, and it basically wants teaching on the areas of consent, on the areas of contraception, gender, sexuality. In response to the bill, sort of in a separate sort of track, this review has been carried out by the National Council for Curriculum Assessment. And yes, there are some critics, some people maybe along the more conservative right-wing areas of politics, who said that it could lead to children being taught, as you say, self-pleasure. Now, the journal.ie, we regularly carry out fact checks into claims, statements, statistics, to assess their veracity and their accuracy. We found this claim that children could be taught self-pleasure to be false, to be inaccurate. I really started with a tweet or a claim by a local election candidate for Renewa, who said that the National Council for Curriculum Assessment report, which informed the bill, referenced a World Health Organization report that mentions children's self-pleasure and says that children should be taught self-pleasure. Now, this, without going into the sort of extensive details, this is not correct. The National Council for Curriculum Assessment report cited by O'Mahony in this instance has no connection, did not inform the sex education bill put forward by the three TDs. The report itself, published by the NCCA, was a very early stage, sort of setting the grounds of sex education, and it did not reference children's self-pleasure or that children should be taught self-pleasure at all. That was not referenced in any of the other debates around sex education bill, not in the Dáil, not in a report published in January, I think, as you mentioned earlier, by the Oireachtas Education Skills Committee. So it's not really been an issue. It's obviously something that's been recommended by anyone. And even just to go back to the WHO report, it's really important to put that in context. So The report makes clear that children from a young age show a sexual curiosity. They just want to explore their own bodies. And the report is basically saying, well, children should be allowed to ask questions, and that the idea of, you know, self-pleasure is an important element of education, but it's an age-appropriate education. I think the debate has kind of become framed as children will be taught in schools, or they'll be taught formally self-pleasure, and this is an important thing that children should be formally taught, where that's just not the case at all.
But is it the case that we could see children being taught about, or maybe it is already the case, I don't have children of that age at school currently, people might also have concerns, though, about them being taught about, people who are transgender, same-sex couples, that type of stuff?
Yeah, so that's, again, one of the things that's important to remember is that we're at a very early stage. So in terms of what could be taught, we don't really know. In all likelihood, we would see education on gender, on sexuality, on these issues, of course. These are the things that we're talking about. And, you know, again, the report published in July by the National Council for Curriculum Assessment spoke to students. And students said, yes, we want education from an earlier age. We want a lot of focus on the areas of sexuality and relationships, not just the biological details. So we probably will have education in those areas, but again, it's very important to state that we don't know. The bill, as published, is very short. There is not much details in it. The bill itself might not even become law. It's a private member's bill that is not really fully supported by either Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. So the actual content will be determined by the ongoing...
But speaking to Joe McHugh, Minister McHugh, he did state last month, and I'm going to play a clip when I finish with you, Dominic, that, you know, changes are coming. And I think there's a document going to be published next month that will give us a much clearer idea of what's coming. But we are expecting some changes in this area. It's just a case of how it comes to pass.
Yeah, exactly. There is going to be changes. And I think a lot of people would say that, you know, we do need changes. You know, a lot of people would argue that Irish sex education is perhaps somewhat inadequate compared to other countries. So there are definitely changes coming, whether that comes through legislation or through an ongoing review conducted, you know, by the National Council for Curriculum Assessment, that remains to be seen. It probably will be the latter, but again, that remains to be seen.
Okay. Dominic, listen, fantastic stuff. People can access the fact-checking branch of the journal.ie through their Twitter handle, but also through the website itself. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
All right, Dominic McGrath there, journalist with thejournal.ie. So we did have concerns expressed by some people, and Minister Joe McHugh is at the head of that department, of course. This is what he had to say when I asked him to address people's concerns about younger children and changes to what they were going to be taught.
We've got a review ongoing in relation to sex education, and at the heart of those decisions, before any decisions are made, will be the parents. And that's
not a fait accompli, is it?
No,
people
sir.
Are coming in saying they're going to be teaching our 3 or 4 year olds about the M word. I'll say it with people on summer holidays stuff. But
you see, this is the difficulty. Everybody has the ability of putting a private member's motion onto the Dáil floor, and that's coming from backbench TDs in the opposition. I can't remember offhand which TDs, but that is nothing to do with the programme that we're doing through the Department of Education. We're doing a review, and at the heart of the decision, before any decisions, there's loads of groups representing, but the most important groups out there representing our children's education.
So in other words, there are groups that maybe would be campaigning and getting involved, you know, that want things liberalised a little bit. And you're saying it's actually the parents of the students that opinions, not that others would be disregarded, but that's the key for you. So if there is more people opposed to this RSE programme in primary schools, well then the will of the parents will be followed.
Well, look, I believe that parents are the fundamental people when it comes to their children's education. And I believe that this review that's ongoing at the moment will be critical, but also the student and parent charter will be instrumental as well. And that legislation will be published in September, but there'll be no changes until the review, and there'll be a further consultation. And every single parent that contacted my office will be listened to, and I will feed their letters into the consultation.
Okay, now we dug out that clip because we asked the Minister, Joe McHugh, to contribute. That was the last time I spoke to him, actually. in mid-July. We asked him to contribute to this piece, but he wouldn't. Right, now, Mary T. Sweeney is an AIN2 representative in Donegal, and she was referenced, or Mary wasn't, T wasn't referenced, but the party was there by Dominic. And we also are going to hear from Carolyn Maguire, youth worker with the Donegal Youth Service. So with all you've heard so far and all your research you've done since we last spoke about this, Mary T, are you any less concerned about where we may be going? And what are your principal concerns?
Well, actually, thank you for having me on, Greg. I'm actually more concerned, and I hope that Dominic is still online there, because Dominic needs to revisit the recent report just out in July by the NCCA and go to page 58, which states that they're still making a reference to the WHO document. The WHO document that we're talking about, people have to understand, and they really have to look at the front cover. It's the framework for policymakers, educational and health authorities and specialists. And this is the document that's the only guideline at the moment for what is age appropriate. Now, the whole concept of reviewing the RSE, they say, is to make it more age appropriate. So where is Dominic looking at the age appropriate? I have been very fortunate in my work as a lecturer to help write policy documents. Everything has to have a module. Everything you discuss must be broken down and assimilated that you can know how to deliver it. So where is the delivery, the module document that tells you what is age appropriate? It is this document, which is the standard for Europe.
What are your concerns about what we might see going forward then? Well, like, what are you dead against happening in schools?
Well, I'm dead against in the age of 9 to 12 that they're talking with children and the information. They have to give information about their first sexual experience. Sexual behaviour of young people.
And now you're quoting the WHO document here,
totally.
Are you?
I'm quoting it from age 9 to 12, and it's referenced in the NCCA guidelines, the new guidelines out in July, which is the review of the policy. You know, this has been referenced twice, so there's a breakdown in communication for Dominic there. He needs to go back and check page 58.
Other than referencing, but that, you see, Dominic's information is some information out there, and this is why I have you here, and this is why I have Caroline here, because, well, Caroline, I beg your pardon, because we are actually still teasing this out at this point. So we'll not constantly reference Dominic. I think you've said that you don't, you know, you think he needs to go back and check it, but that's a narrative that's in the media at the moment, right? So that's what I want that out there for. And then we can tease it out in this part of this discussion. When you talk about the policy document referencing the WHO document, it doesn't mention anywhere in it other than to reference the WHO document about the stuff that will be taught. In other words, you're linking the two.
No, I'm not. It's the actual draft document that's been delivered by the NCAs linking the two. And if you allow me, in addition, it was suggested that curriculum should be fully aligned, with Irish government health policy, including Healthy Ireland, a framework for improved health and wellbeing, and national health strategy. But at the start, it says that the stakeholders suggested that the RSE curriculum should meet the best international standards as set down by the WHO document, Standards in Sexuality Education. And this is the only framework that I'm familiar with that is doing what is needed, and that is breaking down and giving you exact examples of what is age appropriate.
And we've purposely afforded plenty of time for this, so you'll have plenty of opportunity. Carolyn Maguire, youth worker with Donegal Youth Services. Do you believe that we should be teaching our children more in schools about sexuality, and also, you know, reflecting, I suppose, how Ireland has changed, and that's maybe, you know, symbolised mostly with maybe some of the referendums we've had of late, or referendi?
I suppose I can only give an opinion on the young people that I work with. And I suppose in 2018, we were here with you, Greg, at the launch of our own sexual health event. And you had two young people in this very room talking about the reasons and the rationale for delivering a sexual health education event. And it was because it was to complement what is already they're already being taught at home, and to complement what they're being taught in school, and to just bridge the gaps in terms of what they want to hear in schools. And what they want to hear is factual information in a safe environment. And that's what I'm here to talk about today, is the viewpoint from young people themselves and what they want out there.
And what are they saying to you then? And I mean, you don't work with, would you be sort of, conversing with children, what would be the lowest age group that you're talking
12.
Of? 12, okay. 12, and yeah. What are 12-year-olds saying they want to be taught at school?
That they want to hear the facts about their sexual health in terms of age of consent, respect, and they want to know things about relationships and how to be in a safe in a relationship and what is a safe relationship. And that doesn't have to be a sexual relationship. That can be friendships and so on. And that's what they want. And they want it in a safe environment. And they are also saying that if they don't get, if they hear something that they don't understand, they will look to Google for the answer.
And do they want conversations about gender?
Yes.
And same-sex relationships.
Yes, the young people that I worked with and part of that sexual health event, we did talk about gender. It does represent 10% of the school cohort. So yes, they do want to know the facts about it and what it is and what the young people that they're sitting in a classroom with could be experiencing that. And yes, they do want to know about it.
And what age, I know you work 12 plus, but what age do you think it's appropriate to have that conversation? And obviously you would frame it in different ways, but what age of a young person do you think that conversation should be started with?
Well, they're asking questions as young as 12 in our organisation. So that's the ballpark that I would go on there.
But do you think that's a discussion that should be happening in national schools, for example, in an age appropriate way?
Yeah, I do think there are 12-year-olds in national schools. So
of course there are, indeed. Okay. Yeah. Mary T, what's wrong with that? This is what the children are interested in. This is what some of their classmates are going through. We want to be inclusive, don't we? And you don't? Do you take issue with what Carolyn says should be told?
I what I'm saying is Carolyn's age group is probably a different age group because she's working with secondary school children, and that's slightly different. I'll come back to that in a minute. Again, establishing what is age appropriate for 9 to 12 year olds. It is not me that has set the guidelines. It's the experts, sex experts in Europe, and in 9 to 12, they are saying that they're giving out information. This is what will be in the actual documents that the teachers have to teach. Give information about their first sexual experience, sexual behaviour of young people, the variability of sexual behaviour. So parents have got to know that they want to know if their children are going to be taught the forms of sex in primary school, whether it's anal sex, normal sex, whatever it is. These are the language that will have to
be written. Do you have a problem with that?
In primary school, huge.
Mm. And listen, 9 to 12 is the cohort. So 12-year-olds are in national schools. So presumably 9 to 10, 11-year-olds will be caught in this. So we are in the same ballpark. Stay there a second. Stick your headphones on, Carolyn, if you don't mind. Charlotte, do you have any concerns?
Hi. I have concerns just as a parent about what is going to be taught. And just to put it into context for everybody, the Sex Education Bill of 2018 is completely separate to what the NCCA is doing. However, the report that the Oireachtas Education Committee came out with was backed up by the NCCA, and the NCCA are using the same thing. They're saying the same things. They want consent to sexual activity, different types of sexuality, methods of contraception, termination of pregnancy, and all of LGBTQ plus issues to be spoken about in school at an age-appropriate level. So my problem with it is that when I read the NCCA review in November 2018, this holistic sex education, which is far from holistic, that the NCCA are advocating, and this is a quote from page 23, this holistic sex education approach has as its primary focus sexuality as a source of satisfaction and pleasure. It also quotes, I think it's page 25, no, it's page 38, that the parents' approach to sex education is, and this is a quote, future and consequence-oriented, which falls short of the holistic model advocated by WHO. Mm. Now, I don't know who they think they are when they're saying that any approach of a parent to sex education isn't good enough, but they need to back down a little bit, I think. The research paper identified the influence of the Catholic Church in affecting the quality of sex education. That was page 43, and they quoted all different international references. But they did in that report, sorry, I have a child here.
No, we don't worry, we can handle it.
So in this report, they also said, they admitted that in recent surveys done in Ireland, children and students, teenagers, had said that the person that they wanted to speak about sex education to, that they wanted the education to come from, was their parents. So that is in that NCCA report of November 2018. They did a survey, it was a monkey survey. It was online. I did it myself. Some of my friends refused to answer the questions because the multiple choice questions did not allow you to say that the parent should be the person that is passing on sex education.
So you're saying it was structured to eliminate that as an option, or it accidentally excluded it?
I'm not saying that it was done on purpose, but I'm telling you that it was done. I couldn't select the parents, but I made every opportunity that I could to write in the boxes, and I called for everyone to do the same for the October survey. It's still live. To write in your concerns there. I think you're speaking with Caroline Maguire.
Yeah.
So I would say that people who are working with youth services that are speaking to young people as age as 12 about stuff that their parents may think is inappropriate will in the future be held personally accountable for giving that information to children, because they are children. We are protected by the Constitution and by many international rights, including Universal Declaration of Human Rights, as a primary educator. We are supposed to be able to choose the type of education and trust that when we put a child into school, according to the ethos, which I would love to do, and trust that my family values, which I have chosen a school according to, those family values will be passed on. If the family values can't be passed on in issues and topics that have moral consequence and personal consequence and leave the families to deal with the consequences, they shouldn't be taught in school.
Okay, stay there, and Mary T is going to come back in. But Caroline Maguire, I mean, you know, I think maybe there's probably a lot of parents would agree with what Charlotte has to say. Do you agree or disagree?
Any work that we carry out in the Donegal Youth Service and any work that I've carried out in terms of sexual health education was all consented by parents. We have lovely policies and guidelines, and they're ever-changing all of the time in favour of the family values and parents being at the heart of the consent in terms of what we talk to young people about. The agenda was set for me as the Youth Council Coordinator. Sexual health education was on that agenda, and parents were on that journey with their young people, and we always have to seek consent for that. I want to be very clear with that, that I work for an organisation that is set by guidelines and best practices, and we always involve the parents, and we always will, because we want to invite parents into these conversations.
Caroline, if I was of age, say me, I'm 12 and a half, my mate's 12 and a half, and we both go to engage with the Donegal Youth Services, how do you, if I don't have consent to talk to you about things like this, but my friend does, how do you separate us? How is that? Or can I can still access the services, presumably, but do I have to leave the room, or what way does that work?
Well, we run specific programmes tailor-made for young people. So in the programme that I work on with early school leavers, we would look for consent in terms of what educational programmes we are running. And yes, I have yet to encounter a parent declining any of this sort of work that we deliver. I have yet to encounter a parent saying no to it.
Does that surprise you, Charlotte?
Yes. No, sorry, it doesn't surprise me. I am surprised at Caroline's words, because while you may have policies, you said lovely policies and guidelines, there are a lot of angry parents who have realised what's in the policies. We have got one or two sentences out of schools or other youth services. I've signed the box, I've signed the thing, I've ticked the box, and afterwards I find out what my child has been learning. I wasn't given a copy of the guidelines, and a lot of parents don't have the time.
Do parents get copies of the guidelines, as far as we're aware?
They're online, so they're pointed in that direction.
Yeah, that's different from handing them and asking them to read through them before you consent. A lot of parents don't know what's going on.
Okay.
I can guarantee you, I've spoken to a lot of them.
Charlotte, thank you very much for your contribution. 086 60 25,000. Mary T, though, you know, we do live in a changed world. Yeah. And we can't always necessarily rely on parents to fully equip children for this world. You know, is there not a responsibility on the state and on schools and on youth services to ensure that children do understand that, you know, they don't find themselves? I mean, we heard today that... we'll carry on. I want to double check that stat I was going to say, because I don't want to mislead anyone. But, I mean...
Can I tell you, Greg, one of the biggest shocks to me was that we went through a referendum in Ireland on abortion, and abortion is very much down on this policy to be taught to children, and we never ever saw an abortion or were allowed to show an abortion on national television or describe it on national radio. Now, Caroline has said that she's involved in delivering the sexual education from 12-year-olds. I would like to ask her, what does she deliver? Does she hand out? I've been told there's schools that are getting contraceptives in the school toilets.
Well, we'll come back to that. There's many medical procedures that take place in Irish hospitals. And I'm not, I don't mean this anyway, because I know this might sound like I'm being offensive, but I'm not, you know, heart surgery, lung surgery, hip replacement, that we don't know what is involved.
But they don't actively go out to intentionally kill
That's the crux of it. Yeah, but that's the crux of it, because when people vote for abortion, they know what the end result is going to be. We don't...
But they don't... The public and the media are telling people that it's not really life, it's only potential for life. So we are going to have to rewrite sciences in this now. This new RSE is also going to deal with abortion and teaching abortion as normal healthcare. There you have a lot of barriers that you cross over and a lot of bridges you cross. So Caroline hasn't told me what they teach and deliver in the DYS.
We're going to get to that.
In relation to sex education.
Well, do you want to do that now, Caroline? I don't know how many parents would be checking the guidelines, but and we'll focus on the 12s, if that's okay, because it's closer to the bracket we're talking about. Like, what is seen as appropriate to teach someone of that age through Donegal Youth Services?
Well, the event, and I'm just going to go back to the event that we ran.
Yeah, it's the easiest reference, yeah.
Yeah, that I was part of, and that was for 16 plus. That actual event was for 16 plus. So the content that was in it was consent, respect, relationships, STA, information coming from the HSE and various presentations. I myself worked with young people on the Youth Council, and what we talked to them about was the same gender. We had someone coming in talking about gender identity. We talked about respect.
And how is that told, though? I mean, do you discuss that, say, for instance, you know, that if you're a guy, you know, and you don't feel you know, what you look at the mirror the reflection back to you is what you are. Do you talk to people about trying things or experimenting, or, you know, how would you educate someone to explore that emotion or that sense that they have?
We have a professional in the Donegal Youth Service, Sinead Murray, who goes out to schools, and I believe she's been on the radio several times with yourself, Greg, and she would go out and educate teachers, parents and students around gender identity, and it's just the factual information, and that's what young people
want. Would the message be, if that's how you identify, if that's how you feel, that's okay?
Yes, of course it's
and
okay.
And is that transition year, is it? That is aimed at, or what year in secondary
school? Whatever the demand is in school.
So it could be first or second years, which could involve 12
years. I think TYs is what Sinead has talked to me about in the past, of going into schools to.
Are you uncomfortable with that? Because that's.
Totally.
The thing about it is, and the reason I wanted to ask that is because I think, really, if the truth be told, a lot of people listening to this programme right now don't really know what their children are actually being taught at all.
That's true. And there's a huge, huge responsibility on parents to stop and to take stock.
Because that's beyond what I thought was being discussed, if I'm completely honest with you. Now, I don't have, honestly, I'm not saying whether it should or shouldn't. I didn't realise that that's the sort of detail that might be gone
into. And transition years are only 15 and the age of consent in Ireland is 17. So we have got to know that when you promote something, it's a self-fulfilling process. Prophecy.
Potentially. I mean, that's not. And if I two 15-year-olds said, right, we are in a relationship, we want to, you know, we want to have sex. The Donegal Youth Service, would they say, no, excuse me, you can't because it's illegal? Or would they be told, well, you better make sure you use protection? Or is there any guidelines in that regard?
No, they would be told the facts. And the facts is that what you've just said, that it is, you are breaking the law. Mm. And we would be guiding them on that. It's factual information given to them. In terms of RSE, I can only speak as a parent. I have a 15-year-old and I have a 5-year-old. The 15-year-old has gone through the RSE programme. And I have to say, I was given at least 5 weeks' notice in a letter what he was going to be taught.
I never got any of this, but it might be in the box. That being said, it very much might be in the box. I'm not contradicting you, but I don't want you to think, Caroline, I'm just talking real world scenario.
None of the parents.
I'm feeling that might be in the bottom of a school bag somewhere.
Well, I have to say, I'm only speaking from my own experience.
Yeah.
I know you're shaking your head there, Mary T, but this is factual. It came from his school. I was given 5 weeks' notice. I was told exactly what he would be taught. I was given the online information that I could click into the RSE and go through it. I was encouraged encouraged to talk to my child about what he had heard in school in terms of checking in on his feelings, checking in on the moral values that I am giving to him as his mother.
Were you given an option to opt out?
I was given an option to opt out.
And what would happen to him in that scenario? Does he go to a different classroom?
He would go to a different classroom. Or indeed, as a parent, you're given the time that the conversation's going to take place. Mm. You can remove him and bring him somewhere
else. You can't
ask
for much more than that, Mary T. Because, you know, not everyone's able to have that conversation.
Can I say that there are big concerns going on in the background here, and I'm going to try and get to them, because the reality is the word mandatory has been used with this.
Right, we're going to pick up on that because I wanted to give you a good open run at that. Rebecca, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You're from a parent's right. What say you in relation to what's going on here? And I want people to, if possible, that would be of a same mindset as Carolyn to come on as well, because this is... I'm not going to continue with calls that are all sort of on one side of this. Not for this part of the program, because this is something... this is just a little bit different to our regular kind of program. But what's your concern, Rebecca?
Well, just to say good morning to Carolyn and Mary T there, because I know both of them.
Morning.
I have, along with two of my friends, have set up a group called The Parents' Right. And what we are about is giving the parents the information and the option to be able to object to an RSE program. But what we find is the problem, we've had a lot of parents actually contact us looking for the information, because not every school is doing what Carolyn is saying. Not every school is giving the information out like what she might have received.
I didn't get it. I can only speak for myself. I didn't get it, honestly.
Not every school, Greg, either, will keep the child within the class. Some schools... we have been made aware of, the parents must go and take the child out of the school for the length of time that the lesson's been given. And not every parent will be in a position to do that. If you have two parents out working and there may not be other people surrounding them, that will be able to go and physically take that child out of school.
I mean, if that is the case too, that probably does put parents under a bit of pressure to maybe somewhat sacrifice what they want, and that they might be inclined to consent. It's just another maybe slight bit of pressure if that's how they view it.
Yeah, well, you see, you have two separate issues there. You have, on one respect, you have the parents have the option to take their child out of the RSE programme, and they're given that option. But if you're not in a position to be able to do that, how can you put forward your right?
But the child would be accommodated in an assembly area, I'm sure. I can't imagine the...
Well, you see, the what we have been given, I can only go by the...
Yeah, no, okay.
...been given from the parents who have contacted us, is that not every school is actually doing that.
Okay.
So there are schools and there are parents who do object, but the problem is they're not physically capable to take them out of the school at that particular time.
But Carolyn, you would not agree with that yourself, would you? Surely, I don't think you would you?
I can only speak for the school that my two children go to, and as I say, my 15-year-old has been through the RSE programme in his school. I was made aware of what they were talking about, and I suppose the big part for me was I was encouraged. I was given language to talk to my child about. So for parents that are out there who feel so uncomfortable...
Some of the people are learning this too. They're learning this too at the same time, and agreed language and what's appropriate and what is...
And at Donegal Youth Service, we want to empower parents. I think the scaremongering parents is absolutely horrendous, for parents not knowing what their children, thinking that they have no control over what their children are going to hear. I know from working in a service where legislation is reformed constantly, you need consent to take a picture of a child right now. Mm-hmm. I do not envisage in Ireland that we are going to be sending our children to school and they will not have any control over what they're going to be taught. I don't believe any of my friends who are teachers, I don't believe that they will be standing on top.
They don't have
an
inclination to do it either.
Yeah, and they don't want to do it.
Right, listen. Okay, you're very welcome back to the programme, and we're going to say a quick hello to Mary Doherty of Lifeline in the show before we bring Mary T and Carolyn back into the conversation. Are you for or against changes in this area, Mary?
Well, we all know how important it is that young people do get sex education, and it is very important. But one of the things that we have learned, Greg, is, you know, in our experience working with TYs in the schools, one of the things they need to learn first is what is a healthy relationship, what is self-respect, and what is gender equality, before they can understand what a sexual relationship is, or what, you know, what I'm trying to say. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so what are you saying also, too, that the damage that we that some people may feel this might inflict it on children, in, you know, giving them too much information.
And
really what we should be looking at is what is the result of not doing this down the line when you're dealing with them in relationships in their 20s, 30s and so on and so forth. And you work with, obviously it's women, lifelong work with, but you would see what happens when you don't have these type of conversations.
There's no doubt about that. But I think they have to learn first. When we, as I said to you, we've gone into schools working with TY on healthy and on healthy relationships. And it is hard, it is even at this day, that they're not aware about what a healthy relationship is, what their self-respect is, and what gender equality is.
Mm.
And if we, you know, if they are a bit more knowledgeable on that, it's easier for them to understand then what a sexual relationship is and have a better understanding. That's my belief.
All right, Mary, lovely to chat to you as always.
I'm working with the students.
Yeah, okay, good stuff. Right, Mary T, you were going to talk about the mandatory side of this. Does this feed into the fact that, you know, this is not going to be, you know, Educate Together schools or Catholic schools or schools, any religion whatsoever, that this will be right across the board? Is that what you mean by mandatory? Is that one of your concerns?
Can I just explain that to try and deliver this in a short period of time is very difficult because of the amount of background stuff you have to go through. But the most important thing to get out to parents today is, and to grandparents and people that are caring for children where there are no parents available or carers for the children, that there is now an online survey, again, another online survey by the government and the NCCA, and it's called the Review of Relationships and Sexuality Education. Now, this survey will close in October, the 25th, I think the date is. Mm. It's called RSE Review at NCCAA.ie. RSE Review at NCCA.ie. It is imperative that people realise that the survey, it's so important. The government are using these online surveys, spurious surveys, in my opinion, that are not well-formed in the conversation and the questions that they deliver.
Well, what kind of questions are we talking about? Without getting into the nitty-gritties too much. But I suppose we have to have the conversation too, don't we? Carry on.
Right. It asks you for the parent, the teacher, the student or the school leader or external provider of RSE to schools, if you're a teacher educator. They're your categories that you can respond to. There's no deadline to the number of responses you can put in. And then there's very specific questions. So it gives all stakeholders, it's telling us in the review that all stakeholders are showing strong agreement that RSE needs to be more than information about biological aspects of growing up and sexual activity. And it needs a holistic approach that balances discussion about the risks and dangers and continues to tell us that they're actually looking to open up and bring a very much more open talk on sexuality and the different types of sex into the school system, right? So then it asks you, do you agree, strongly agree, disagree, or strongly disagree? And then to what extent do you broadly, and it gives you a small space that you can write something. What are the aspects you disagree with? What else is important when considering the approach to teaching SPHE? And what really concerns me is asking, it's suggesting that the survey has identified that the SPHE and RSE need to be amalgamated and taught as a mandatory unit. Now, in 1995 or 93 or 95 time, we introduced RSE, SPHE, and it became mandatory in 2003. So when you see the word mandatory and the government's using online surveys, every parent that concerns about the well-being and the moral values of their children are going to form needs to get online and inform themselves. And parents have got to be shaken here and said, you have a responsibility.
Do you think 12-year-olds should be taught about same-sex relationships and what happens within those same-sex relationships?
I do not think that 9 to 12-year-olds should be taught to make a conscious decision to have sexual experiences or not. And that's what the WHO document is teaching as mandatory and age-appropriate for 9 to 12-year-olds.
Marie, good morning to you.
Oh, hello, Sean.
Thank you very much for taking the...
Sorry,
all right, it's no problem. Right, what do you think should be taught in schools? You'd be in favour of maybe sex education being more reflective of society, would you?
Yes, I mean, I guess I'm struck by the conversation on a number of different levels. I worked for Donegal Youth Service in the mid-90s, and I remember trying to introduce these kind of programmes back then, you know, through youth clubs and that, and meeting this kind of resistance at the time. So I'm really struck by how far we've come and the fact that, and the great work that Donegal Youth Service is doing on so many levels, that, you know, that these kind of programs exist now, and that we have very good modules, and that are coming out of the likes of Donegal Youth Service, and that they're age appropriate. And I think that's really, really important in all of this. I suppose where I'm also coming from is I'm actually doing this kind of work now at the national level, and looking at it there with an organisation called Shout Out in Ireland. And then I'm also working for an international organisation, Plan International, and looking at this this issue at kind of the UN level. And I'm very struck by the type of resistance that we're, and I can understand resistance from a certain point, and I think there's a natural amount of that, and kind of keeps a bit of balance as well on you know, just on how we roll out this kind of work. But I think we just have to be really, really careful on this as well. I think, as I said in my original text, ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is dangerous. And young people need to know how to protect themselves. They need to know how to manage themselves emotionally and physically.
But at what age do you start giving that information, whereby you're talking to a child who's doesn't even want to talk about this in the playground? They want to worry about what they're doing in the evening, or sticking the PlayStation on, or going out to play, or whatever. Why introduce this conversation and get them even thinking in this route before, say, they have a mom and dad of opposite sex, and you start talking about mums and dads of same sex and all that manner of thing? How can we be sure that that is not affecting the child, that that's not starting a conversation in their head that they're too young and not equipped to even have themselves?
I think Sean, Greg, I'm really sorry. I think that, I think we have to be really careful as adults about our own naivety around, that kind of, those kind of concerns.
Mm. Why is it naive?
Because it's naive because we assume that if we don't formally introduce this kind of information through the school system or whatever, that they're not going to have this information. Right. So what happens is that they do get information, but it's very disrupted, it's very broken, it's very sort of playground gossipy kind of information.
And it could be coming from a porn site. I mean, I don't want to be upset, but I mean,
this is the thing. They have so many exposure points, they really do. And I think what's really important, there's some really important concepts that are used. Like, the people who are working in this area are not going around just doing whatever they feel like doing on the day and throwing out information.
Okay.
There's a very important concept in there called evolving capacity. And so essentially what that means is that you give information that is appropriate for that age.
Mary T,
so
that's a very... that's
a 9 to 12-year-old, you're not going into graphic detail like that. It gets more and more detailed as they get older and get able to handle that.
I mean, Mary T, that's a good point Marie's making. We're controlling the narrative. We're controlling the flow of information. We're pointing children in stuff they're going to hear about, stuff they're going to learn, stuff they're going to be talking to their friends about. At least if we have a structured system that reflects really modern society, well, what happens in the vacuum?
Maria, I'm delighted to get the opportunity to talk with you, obviously in a very influential position. Can I ask you, are you familiar with the WHO document as a standard for sexuality education in Europe?
I mean, I'm not familiar with that document in particular, but there are international standards on these things. And I think, and what they always come down to as well is the balance of rights between parents' rights and children's rights. And when I say by children, I mean up to 18. And so any documents that come out from WHO or UNICEF or any of those kind of organizations, they take a lot of pains to really be very careful about the balance between those two rights. And I think that what we have today is a lot of parents and adults talking about what's right or not right for this age group. But we have to be really thinking about and careful about as well is thinking about what are their actual rights to information.
Well, that's what Carolyn McGuire too, because your work, Carolyn, has been in, and this is what we talked about, what children want, what they believe would be useful for them to learn.
And what's currently out there as well. And can I just say that I don't believe that the RSE programme is going to be responsible for the early sexualisation of children and young people. And I think we have to be very careful around that the internet is providing that. And we know at the Donegal Youth Service from delivering internet safety that children as young as 10 have access to devices that they can click and they can get dangerous and traumatic information in their hands. And I don't believe that the RSE programme review, or whatever way it is reviewed and looked at, that will be responsible for the early sexualisation.
Can I just ask
children?
One question there of Maria?
Maria.
Maria, beg your pardon. Maria, what document would you recommend parents look at then for age-appropriate sex education? Because I've been involved in education and
the SAMI
modules.
Guide.
Sorry, I'm chatting to
Maria. No, it's an open conversation, Maria, please, no, if you don't mind.
I just want to know which Maria, which one is the one that you believe the NCCA will be using for parents to use as a guide for what is actually the modules, the specific words that children will be used and what to be taught, and what is appropriate.
Okay, Maria, answer the question if you don't mind. Thank you very much. I know you only rang up to contribute a little bit, but I know you have experience, so it's useful.
So I think that the process that we're going into is going to look at a number of different sources. So I don't think it's possible to say right now that this is the absolute one and this is the best one and this is the other one. I mean, when I would have taken resources from around the world and looking at different cultural contexts and as well. And I think that's really important here to reflect on that, you know, we're talking about this for a particular context for Donegal and what we think is best within sort of what works for Donegal. But we also have to... you know, our children are citizens of Ireland and they deserve all the same rights.
So Maria, to some extent then, do we have to put children first? And if that means not removing parents out of the equation somewhat, but if that means upsetting some parents to better educate, as some would see it, our children, well then so be it. That's what we have to do because we have to put the children first.
But there's a concept called best interest of the child. And so when I've done any child rights work, and I've done this in various parts of the world, and it very often comes back to the same conversation, and I'm really struck by that, is that the concept of best interest of the child means that you have to look at all the rights that exist in the Convention on the Rights of the Child and all of that side of things on the child, but then there's the evolving capacity issue. So they're not able to look after everything, all their own needs, as that capacity evolves over time until they become an adult. So that's obviously where the parents come in, and then they have to use their judgment. But their judgment has to be informed by what the rights are and what the needs are and what informed choice would look like and how to help equip their children to prepare themselves for life. Because that's really what we're looking at here. And there's in many levels, you could say it's really not too early to start preparing them for life. Like everything we do every day is preparing them for life, from teaching them to walk right through to the, you know, at what age certain types of information are appropriate.
Maria, thank you very, very much. I appreciate having you access to expertise. And Merity, on that, you know, one of the most successful things, and it's been award-winning, that the council have been involved in and schools have been involved in, is the RSA road safety messages. And it's bringing people in at a certain age and saying, look, in a few years, you're going to be out driving cars, and this is what you have to look out for. This is the consequences of not driving correctly. Now, they're not saying, you know, go out and drive every car that's going and drive all different... They're saying, this is what can happen and this is how you have to protect yourself. Is that not what sex education is? That we are not saying, run around and do this and do that, but we are telling people, this is how you look out for yourself. And how can that be negative?
It really concerns me that somebody working at a UN status in sex education didn't name the policy for age-appropriate sex education.
She says she draws from many different policy documents.
But this specific policy is not for Donegal, it's for Ireland, and it's the NCCA are quoting the WHO document.
And multicultural Ireland as well.
But the WHO document is the one that they're using, they're referencing that.
Okay. Carolyn, as we wrap up, what would you want to say?
I suppose what I would like to say to parents is that I hope that you can be empowered to talk to your children about sexual health. It is important, and the young people that I am working with are saying that they want the facts, and they want it to come from home, they want it to come from schools, and they want the facts. I would recommend going to your local library, going and look for the SAMI guide. That is to maybe start healthy conversations with your children, your teenagers, in an age-appropriate manner.
It gives you a framework
there for you,
it, really,
and it gives you a framework to launch that
conversation. But you might even think those book shouldn't be in the library, Mary T.
Can I just say that I think that Minister for Education, has got off very lightly. I'm very disappointed that he hasn't been on air here today.
Well, I've invited him on many occasions. He's RTE,
parents.
I don't know, are on to him. I haven't a clue. I haven't spoke to him since July 19th.
Your recorded interview said that he invited parents to send their feedback and their concerns to him, and I would strongly urge parents to do that. And the reality is if this online survey goes ahead, be careful, because the word mandatory means the parents will not be able to object.
Regardless of the school's ethos, etc.
Regardless of the school's
ethos. But there'll always be an opt-out, won't there? Or
no,
are you saying you're of the belief?
It's not been allowed. It's not been discussed. It's not been put on the table.
I find this very educational for both of you. Thank you, Carolyn Maguire.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Youth worker with Donegal Youth Services. As I say, it's been very informative. Thank you to Mary T. Sweeney, ain't the representative in Donegal. Every time you're on, people accuse me of cutting you off. Yeah. Are we all right today? number five. But you always can ring at 5 to 11.
Can I just say that the one thing that Minister McHugh could do is, if you want to be really proactive in protecting children, take the telephone out of the schools. Ban the phone in the schools across this country.
Well, that was next week's Monday's Matters.
Was it? Yeah.
No, I'm only joking. It is actually quite an interesting debate.
Yeah. I think they should ban the school.
What about
the phone?
You wouldn't be against that, would you?
Against what?
Banning phones out of schools?
I wouldn't be in favour of that.
You wouldn't be?
No.
Okay. Right, listen, both of you, thank you very much. A lovely exchange of views and very respectful, and we appreciate that greatly. Not that we would expect anything else, but it's been informative. Mary T. Sweeney and Carolyn Maguire.